Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Gentlemen, did we all survive for Comic Book Day?
No. Oh. I am the ghost of Dave.
Okay.
I'm the reanimated corpse of Nick.
I'm just Randy.
once we get all the magic done, we'll be back, though.
Yeah. But Free Comic Day was this weekend. It was great. We had a ton of people come out.
Yep.
Hopefully you're having a good time.
Did you? If people were on our Facebook page, that little girl dressed as Batgirl was like, that picture is amazing.
And the little boy was dressed as Batman. Yep. They put the pair of them together. Yeah, it was great.
I'm going to take them as emblematic of the exuberance that is Free Comic Book.
They are the spirit of Free Comic Book Day manifest.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's how Chris Claremont would have phrased it in the 80s.
That is exactly how it would.
No, it was super fun. A busy, crazy day as always, but like I felt like we were connecting a lot of people with the comics they were looking for, answering a lot of all their questions for a lot of people who were, you know, just getting back into comics or had never been into it or had been in but were not for a long time. It's always a really good day for that, just to kind of enthuse about the medium.
Yep. And we are now on to planning for our next big event, which is the midnight release.
For Free Comic Book Day for next year, and I'm like, whoa.
No.
We got some time.
No, our next big event, which is our midnight release, it's coming up on May 24th.
Yep.
We'll have a variety of details on that. You can go to the website and see what all we're going to work it all out. We'll give you all the details next week when we'll be 1 week out from it. Yep.
But it's basically Wednesday morning madness on a Tuesday night at midnight.
On Tuesday, May 24th. And it should be fun. We'll basically, at 9 o'clock when the store usually closes, we'll start all the festivities.
Yep. And then big books hitting that night.
And then at midnight, we'll sell, Justice League number 50, which is going to reveal the Joker's real name. My money's on Sal. Then we're going to have Captain America Steve Rogers number 1, which was a great preview in Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
And
what's that Dark Knight special?
The Dark Knight special with the Joker.
Yeah, with the Joker. I mean, the big sort of thing that's commanding this all is DC's Rebirth.
DC
special.
Rebirth, the 80-page $2.99 special.
Yep, and, which will presumably reveal all about what's going on, but also I imagine it's going to have its own be a pretty good dramatic comic.
And as Nick is going to note,
there's another book called Scooby Apocalypse that'll be coming out that same night as well.
It's looking fun.
And there's a preview of that this week that's got the previews of all the Hanna-Barbera, some sketches and stuff that looks pretty cool. It's free. You can pick it up while we have supplies.
But we should also mention that every DC book is going to be available.
And every Marvel book.
And every Marvel book as well. So
word's still out on whether the indie guys will say just
it's not
out.
Happening. We'd know by now. So Image, all that stuff is going to have to wait till the next day.
It's going to be such a huge pain in the butt for us to... you know what we should do, Randy? We should get comic book backing boards and cover the stuff we're not selling so we can put it all up on the wall, but we cover the stuff we can't sell.
Sounds like a damn nightmare.
No, but like that's easier than putting it all back up. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
We can probably figure that out off mic.
Yes. No, let's figure it out right now. Let's get the logistics down.
Let's spend an hour on that. All right, but before that happens in May 21st, Gaming with Rogues. That'll be the third Saturday. We're going to do Betrayal at House on the Hill. Yep. And if you are a Rogue Card member, you can get 10% off on Betrayal at House on the Hill this month. Then coming up in June 7th, that's a Tuesday night. We're going to close a little early. We'll close at 7 o'clock. But if you are a lady, we encourage you to come out for Ladies' Night because we have Kelly Sue DeConnick Skyping in from 7:30 to about 8-ish to answer questions about Bitch Planet, Captain Marvel, working in the industry, anything you want to ask her, really. I mean, within reason. But come out for that. We're working on some special stuff for that. It's going to be sort of our biggest Ladies' Night ever, and hopefully you guys will be able to come out and make that a successful event. Then on June 14th will be our bi-monthly Reading with Rogues here in the store. The selection for May is Doctor Strange, The Oath, which right now you can get 15% off on. If you have a Rogue card, you can get 25% off on. And then our selection for June is going to be Saga Volume 1, which we've never discussed in the reading group before.
Yep, so crazy as it seems, it's a double Vaughn.
So come out on June 14th, and you can talk Doctor Strange and Saga, both Brian K. Vaughan books. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot of Brian K. Vaughan that night. We'll talk Doctor Strange in general. We'll talk about Image, I'm sure. We'll talk about all kinds of graphic novels and stuff. So that's a fun get-together. June 18th, that Saturday, is Free RPG Day. We will have a variety of free RPGs from different manufacturers. Then, of course, June 25th is All Ages Awesomeness 6, when we have 8 creators coming in the store to sign and sketch and talk about comics. And We've got our headliners, Babs Tarr from Batgirl and the upcoming Image Motor Crush. We've got Joe Quinones from Howard the Duck. Previously, he's done stuff like Green Lantern and Harley Quinn. And we've got artists down from Houston. We've got Isaiah Broussard and Jesse Jordan from Dallas. We've got Jake Eckes and Evan Cranston and Robert Wilson. And I think that's everyone. And then from Austin, right here in Austin, we've got Irene Strakowski, who does the Badass Women in History books that she'll have with her and is just a great artist. So
I'm very excited.
It's a good lineup. It's always fun. That'll be from 10 to about 6 on that Saturday, June 25th. We handed out a bunch of flyers on Free Comic Book Day. Put it on a calendar. Share it with your friends. It's going to be a fun event.
Telling a family with a few kids in it about the event on Free Comic Book Day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was telling them that they could go up to any of these artists and they could, you know, request a character or like, you know, like, they may not necessarily draw like a full body sketch, but they'll do head sketch and things like that. And I was kind of telling them, you know, within reason, they're not going to draw a whole team or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the kids started going through, they're like, could they draw Deadpool? And I'm like, yeah, I suspect they can probably draw Deadpool. And then they just started listing, could they draw Batman? Yeah. Could they draw Raphael? You know?
Yeah.
I assume they meant from the Ninja Turtles, but maybe they meant
the painter.
That's right. But it was just kind of funny.
Raphael drawing Raphael.
Oh. You mean the turtle drawing the painter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
That doesn't make any sense now.
That's ridiculous.
Why would a Renaissance painter draw a turtle?
Maybe he loves turtles.
I like turtles. And then finally, one last bit of preview of our July events. July 17th will be our pre-release for the Magic the Gathering next set, Eldritch Moon. So yeah, lots of stuff coming up. Summer is going to be crazy busy. Hope to see a lot of you guys. And let's move on to news.
Yep.
Which is heavily on the TV and movie side of things this time out.
Okay.
But I'm going to start with the comic announcement because I'm really excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
Oni Press just announced a sub-imprint called Limerence Press.
Oh, yeah,
that's their erotic fiction imprint, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's like an erotica line.
So, and erotica...
Oh, and go ahead. Like sex ed, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, they specifically mentioned an educational focus on it, too. Yeah.
And if that sounds tremendously boring, then you need to see some samples from their first outing.
Which is Oh Joy Sex Toy by Erica Moen, which is a webcomic. It's free. Go check it out. Erica and her partner, I'm blanking his name. I want to say it's Greg, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
her husband. They review various sex toys that are sent to them.
Yeah.
And they also talk about, they did one where they interviewed a stripper.
Yeah.
They did one where they went to sort of like a bondage club.
Yeah.
It's like sort of all the questions you might have about sex would be embarrassed to ask. And they cover it in sort of a funny and fun way. And she's a great cartoonist.
I realized I had not read a lot of it. So I just thought, I'm just going to go and look and see what's the first one on their page right now. And it was, kids, go away from the mic for a minute. It's not too bad. It was about period sex.
Yeah.
And it was like really very funny and well written and witty. You know, they're very sex positive, of course.
Yep.
But they don't shy away from taboo topics. They approach it with a sense of humor. You're going to feel comfortable reading these.
Yep.
It's not like you feel squicky afterwards or anything like that.
Yep.
They're really well done.
And they're currently doing the Kickstarter for Volume 3. But what they're going to do is Oni Press is going to release Volumes 1 through 3 for the comic shop market,
uh-huh.
Which is pretty cool. Now, the promise of this is really good because Colleen Coover, who we love,
yes.
She had a comic through Eros that's long out of print called mm-hmm. Small Favors
mm-hmm.
That was a lesbian erotica comic
yep.
That was really cute, really fun, and had great cartooning. And I'd love – that seems an obvious fit here.
And I will say, just kind of thinking, turning it over in my head, other ones from the last few years that you know – might not. I don't suspect they're going to leave their company
they're already with.
But like Sunstone is obvious.
Yep, Chester 5000.
Chester 5000. Empowered, maybe even.
Yeah.
These are all ones that are at least naughty or semi naughty.
Yeah.
So there's art, and we've already been getting some smart erotica.
Yeah.
Fantagraphics used to have their Eros line. That was more just like hardcore pornography.
They had Bill Willingham did one.
Yeah. I've seen Bill Willingham's one. It's hardcore pornography.
Birdland, which was by
it's the Hernandez brothers.
Hernandez brothers. I couldn't come up with it.
They did have some aspirations in there, but along the way there was a lot of just straight kind of smut.
Just porn, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ironwood, which was Bill Williams' thing, was definitely hardcore pornography, but it was also like a fantasy story.
Right, and it had some of his trademark wit.
His humor, yeah.
And I think this is going to be probably step above that, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'm holding out hope for collections of Ogloff, the Dungeons & Dragons sex comic thing that they do online.
That's a really well done comic.
So... But I don't know. I'm curious because Ojoy Sex Toy is kind of a thing of its own, and if they can do more of that kind of thing, it's going to be interesting.
Yep.
So, but this is an interesting development. I'm curious to see how this works out for
Ojoy. I cannot recall the last time a notable publisher did an erotic comics line that was not Fantagraphics, and that was like 20 or 30 years ago that line launched.
Yeah.
So it's actually really big, and I think the fact that they Oni is known to be like a responsible company, you know, they're not just going to be putting out trash.
Right.
It's a telling and good time to be in.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to, let's do movies first, because I think there's only a couple bits of movie news.
Should we say that at the end of this podcast, we're going to talk about the big movie that everybody has to talk
Jungle
about.
Jungle Book.
Jungle Book, yeah.
We're going to talk about it again.
Now, we were talking about
Superman v. Batman. We're going to talk about Superman v. Batman.
I'm trying to tell the people, Randy.
I know, and I'm trying to disrupt you.
It's a lure so that they don't leave us to go watch Game of Thrones reruns. Right.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to talk about Supergirl. Supergirl, the Helen Slater. We're talking about Civil War.
You just go on, right?
Yeah, okay, fine. We're going to talk about Civil War. We're going to do it last because we want to talk about spoilers so that we will get to it. We haven't forgotten. All right. Movie news from the internets this week, though. Irredeemable, the story about a Superman type gone bad because of his ego, is in development for a movie being directed by Adam McKay.
That was Boom Studios.
Boom Studios.
About 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah,
it was notable because it was Mark Waid and Peter Krause.
Yep. And it was good stuff. I don't think I ever finished it, but I read a lot of it.
Yeah.
And Adam McKay is kind of a big deal. I mean, he just finished The Big Short, which was it Oscar nominated or was it? Okay, that's what I thought. And of course, he did Anchorman.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's something else notable in his resume that I'm just forgetting. But Adam McKay's been around.
R-rated movie, huh?
Yeah,
probably.
Well, it was pretty violent.
Yeah.
You know what I think is kind of interesting? It's potentially about something like this and some other movies. You know, Steven Spielberg was a bit of a negative Nelly about superhero movies. He was like, you know, he's like, they got to die out sometime soon.
Yeah.
And what I wonder if what we're more likely to see is sort of what happened with the Westerns, which is they diversify.
Yeah.
When Westerns were so dominant in American cinema culture.
Yeah.
But then you started getting subversive Westerns. Mm-hmm. You started getting like the grittier ones. They started using Westerns not just always about cowboys and Indian stuff, but to explore other things, even injustices and stuff like that.
Well, that's what some, like, Paul Feig has gone on record as saying they wanted to do. They wanted to sort of utilize the superhero movie in a different way.
Right. And they've already been doing it, but I feel like we're probably going to start breaking a little bit away, diversifying a little bit from Marvel and DC heroes.
Did you say Paul Feig?
I did say it, but Kevin Feige.
Yeah. The Marvel guy.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Paul Feig from the Ghostbusters. I'm like, why does he have an opinion?
He can have an opinion about whatever he wants.
It's true.
But I suspect we are more likely to see diverse superhero, you know, using the genre for different ideas.
I agree, and I think that's a good thing. All right, and also we have the big news from Star Wars. They have cast their new Han Solo. It is Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah?
I don't know who that is.
Who that?
He looks fine, I'm sure. I've never seen him or anything. I have no idea what to judge. But Star Wars so far, since the Kathleen Kennedy era, since we've seen what we've seen of Rogue One, we saw of Episode 7, Rebels, seems to be in good hands, and I have some faith in them right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Randy, did you by chance see the latest video for the Force Awakens Lego game?
No, I didn't.
Did you see that they are getting like all the movies people to do voice acting?
Oh, that's pretty great.
Original voice acting? And I was like, well, yeah, maybe most of them, but not Harrison Ford. No, Harrison Ford.
That's great.
Is voicing a Lego cutscenes and stuff like that.
Oh, that's funny.
At one point, they're trying to get, they're like, everybody's having like food, and he's like, Chewbacca wants a Wookiee cookie. So yes, Harrison Ford actually read those lines.
Yep.
Just a little aside about Star Wars.
Hey, what else is funny? Wasn't even in the script. That's what he said.
You know, he has been known to smoke a little.
All right, moving on to TV news, and there's a few notable things. Two things rescued from the dustbin, actually, probably because of the success of Flash and Arrow and that kind of thing. Krypton, which was a pilot or an idea that had been shut down a while back, has been greenlit by Sci-Fi. Mm-hmm. It is written. It's really for a pilot at least. It's not all the way to series yet.
No, but knowing Sci-Fi and sort of their need for shows,
yeah,
I think this one will probably get greenlit completely.
So, So the bad news is it's written by David Goyer. And it is about Krypton.
Before kind of like his misfires, he's had some hits.
Back in the glory days of Blade.
Blade, but didn't he like write some other stuff that was decent?
He was involved in the Dark Knight stuff. I don't know how much you want to give him credit for it.
I remember when this was bouncing around as an idea, we kind of talked it over and came up with some ways that a Krypton show could work.
Sure.
I have no idea what they're doing. Do we know
yet? It is Jor-El's father, is what I gather.
Okay.
So it's going to be like sort of the history of the House of El.
It's going to be Game of Thrones-ish? But
it sounds like maybe a little Game of Thrones-ish.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not the worst idea. Sci-fi has
something
been,
like that may play to Goyer's strengths more than straight superheroes would.
Maybe. I'm not sure he has any strengths.
Would almost have to play.
I've lost any faith I had in Goyer.
But I bet you own Blade.
No, I don't, actually.
Do you not?
I had it on VHS.
Oh, okay. You have
so it did not make the transition to the new collection. Sci-fi has actually had a pretty good track record lately. They did The Magicians. They did The Expanse. They did 12 Monkeys is supposed to be good. Mm-hmm. They're doing Childhood's End, so maybe?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Possible.
Also, a pilot that got made and never went anywhere was Lock and Key.
Right.
And now they are developing...
based on the IDW comic
by
Joe Hill.
Yep, and now they are developing it, and Joe Hill is writing it.
I was going to say, Joe Hill is more actively involved in this one, so...
Well, it's interesting to be... previously there was a pilot that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And it did have... It wasn't like, as you noted earlier, Nick, it's not nobody in it. It was... who's the actress?
Lena Headey.
Lena Headey was in it. But just this... the same way that we, that Hulk, Ang Lee's Hulk movie tanked, and a few years later they did a new Hulk movie, and that kind of set the stage for superhero movies to start thinking, oh, hey, if something flops, it's not that it's done forever, you just need a few years and cleanse the palate.
Yeah.
And it seems like a little bit of something with the same TV thing, because I thought that property would just be dead.
Yeah.
They made a pilot, it didn't take off, it's dead.
We're definitely in a different pop culture world. It used to be that if something died out, that just never got adapted again.
Right.
And now there's definitely more of a, let's go back and give this another shot. There's such a hunger for pop culture properties. There's such a wider, because of the way the market is fragmented, I think, and you get smaller projects, but lots of them, that people are always looking for more content.
Well, the pilot for Lock and Key was made for Fox, and they're a little sometimes gun-shy.
Yeah.
Sometimes not. I would assume for this one they haven't announced what network it will be for. I actually wouldn't be shocked if it's something like Netflix or
Amazon.
Amazon.
Hulu.
Yep. They seem to have been getting a lot of good stuff lately, so that seems like a good property to have.
I don't know if we've mentioned the comic in a while, but it's a really good comic that is a supernatural book. It's horror, but it's not like just straight horror sometimes. It's almost more dark fantasy.
It's Haunted House in a way.
Yeah, but don't you think there's almost like more of a dark fantasy thing, along with some very serious character stuff?
There's some
elements
extent
of that, but...
It's a Stephen King-like book. I mean, Joe Hill is Stephen King's son.
Yeah.
It feels like the kind of thing Stephen King would do.
And it's beautifully illustrated by Gabriel Rodriguez.
Yep.
It's just gorgeous.
So, if done right, this could be big.
Yeah. Finally, this is the one I'm most excited about. The Electric Dreams of Philip K. Dick. It's going to be a 10-part miniseries. Each episode will be a standalone story based on one of Philip K. Dick's stories.
Interesting.
It's going to be on Channel 4 in the UK, and Sony is going to distribute it worldwide.
So, maybe slightly shades of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Those kind of... hopefully really strong standalone sort of movies.
And its co-producers include Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica and Bryan Cranston, who will star in each episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's notable. I'm very curious about this. Philip K. Dick's stuff has been adapted to so many good, like Blade Runner, Minority Report. I'm trying to think what else. So much of his stuff has been adapted. Yeah. So much of his stuff has been adapted to movies. And
loosely, Total Recall.
Yeah, Total Recall. That's actually another one.
Loosely.
And then, of course, The Man in the High Castle is over on Amazon right now. Yeah. So I like the idea of this being sort of an anthology series, sort of Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, Black Mirror kind of thing. So, I'm excited about that. We don't know when it's going to air in the U.S. or where, but I'm looking forward to it. But it will air. All right, that wraps up our news for this week. We'll be back in just a second. We're going to give you our previews review for the month. It is time for the monthly segment we do where we go through the previews catalog, which is our catalog that we get every month that lists everything we can possibly order from our Diamond distributor, all the comics, a lot of the merchandise. And We're going to go through that and give you guys our picks for stuff we think you might be interested in. You can always pre-order this stuff from us and come up to us and get a pre-order in.
We've got, about a month and a half?
We'll be ordering end of this month.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to go through and give you a few of our picks. And Nick, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a Dark Horse book. Most notably for this one caught my eye because of the creator. It's Curtis Wiebe.
Okay.
Who did Rat Queens.
Up until recently.
Yeah, up until recently. And this book is called Bounty, number one. It says it's a miniseries, so it's one of 10.
Oh, is it 10? Okay. Yeah, I thought it was a little shorter than that.
10-issue series. But it's about sort of bandits turned bounty hunters, which I thought was a fun concept.
Yep.
And the art is by Mindy Lee. There's some preview artwork, and it just looks sort of that fun, cartoony, and it looks like just...
It reminds me of what I liked about Babs Tarr, for example, or Stacey Lee.
But I know sort of from that viewpoint of Rat Queens, he had sort of fun adventures in plan, and I can imagine bandits turned bounty hunters sort of will have the same kind of feel as Rat Queens, kind of the insanity of it all.
Is this the actual writer of Rat Queens? I'm sorry, I missed that. Is it going to have that same foul mouth?
I would assume.
Well, the pitch is Rat Queens meets Firefly.
Okay. Yeah.
Which, that's a good pitch, if you can hit that.
Although, the thing I gleaned from that, is it an all-female cast?
I think it is.
The two bounty hunters female.
For the numerous people who are going to be missing Rat Queens, this is a good sub.
Yeah, I think it's a good sub. That I think will be a lot of fun. Dave, what you got?
Let's see what I have. Turn into the right page here. So one of my favorite graphic novels series, probably I'm going to say ever, is Bone.
Yep.
Jeff Smith's Bone.
Yep.
If you haven't read it, it's, I sort of sometimes shorthand it by saying it'd be like the equivalent of Disney or Pixar adapting Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
The serious stuff is serious in it, but there's a lot of humor along the way, and it is that big humor, that's almost like Warner Brothers style. Ends up with beautifully drawn characters, and I mean their personalities. It is, however, also beautifully drawn.
Yep.
And now it ended some years ago, like over 10 years ago, I think. After a run that ran about 9 volumes or so, but he is producing. Jeff Smith is producing on its 25th anniversary, a special called original graphic novel called Bone Coda, that will wrap things up.
Now, this is not all Jeff Smith. It is not a graphic novel of Jeff Smith. It is a 24-page story by Jeff Smith that wraps it up.
Is it only 24 pages?
It's only 24 pages.
Okay.
The rest of the graphic novel is that Bone companion material.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of like scholarly analysis and commentary and that kind of thing.
But with all new illustrations added.
But with all new illustrations. And the important thing is, an all new... Basically, an all new Bone issue.
I just hear that it's that short. I thought there was more to it of the original material. But I can still work with it.
But it's 24 pages of phony, smiley... Yeah.
Right, it's going to be an epilogue with these, favorite characters.
Yeah.
And,
if I don't see Bartleby in those 24 pages, I'm going
to
be sad.
I think you're likely to see Bartleby.
You're going
to
see him. alright, so yes, that is my first pick. Randy, what you got?
Alright, I'm going to jump over to DC, because there's a lot of DC.
There's a lot of DC.
And the one I want to talk about is the Batgirl and Birds of Prey.
Yep.
So there's Batgirl Birds of Prey number one, Rebirth number one, and also Batgirl number one, which sort of will launch out of that.
Yep.
And this is being written by, as I turn the
it's
page,
Hope Larson? The women running the 100, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Oh, right. I wasn't thinking of the Rebirth special. 86, right?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. It is being written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, who is, as Nick notes, they are working on...
The CW show.
And they're going to be writing Birds of Prey. But they're launching, basically, Batgirl and Birds of Prey Rebirth. The art is by Claire Rowe. I don't know who that is, but it's probably going to be pretty good. The title of the story is Who is Oracle Chapter 1? Basically, it seems like Oracle maybe have gone sort of a bad hacker.
Okay.
And to track her...
Yeah, that's right. The New 52 has not really presented us Oracle.
Right. So to track her down, Helena Bertinelli, now wearing the Hood of the Huntress... is going to be working with Black Canary and Batgirl to track down this new hacker. Then we're going to have Batgirl number one, which is written by Hope Larson, who I love.
Mm-hmm.
She did Goldie Vance, which I really enjoyed. She did that adaptation of Wrinkle in Time.
Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
And the art is by Raphael Albuquerque of American Vampire, and it's beautiful.
That's a pretty powerhouse team.
And this is going to be... Babs travels Japan on a quest to train with the most elite modern combat masters of the East. and she meets an old friend and is going to use her skills to solve a mystery. This is a great pitch.
They, you know, just as a general format for all the DC books that we're going to be talking about today and that are relaunching over the next few months is they all get a rebirth special, right?
Yep.
Kind of just a standalone that'll really set the stage, I guess, for the series. And then they start with an issue number one. So pretty much all the books that we might be mentioning from DC will have both of those coming out this month.
Yep.
But Nick, before I get to my DC picks, which I want to talk about one more Dark Horse property.
Yep.
And this is just I want to love it because it just sounds crazy. And that's Predator versus Judge Dredd versus Aliens.
I also want to love this book.
I mean, not only is
they've
it...
They've done good with it before, by
not
the way.
Not only is it written by John Layman, who... of Chew, and he's written a ton of stuff.
I didn't notice Layman wrote it.
Various different
companies.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, I love all these characters individually. Seeing them thrown together in a story... basically, the pitch is the ultimate science fiction crossover pits the legendary lawman Judge Dredd against the universe's supreme hunters, the Predators, as they both try to survive an onslaught by the galaxy's ultimate killing machines, the aliens. I mean,
so is it going to be Judge Dredd working with a Predator against aliens?
I think at some point, probably.
That'd be fantastic.
Because that sounds great.
How about Judge Dredd working with an alien versus the Predator?
The previous...
That sounds less likely.
High five.
Let's go, partner. Yes.
The previous Judge Dredd alien series from some years ago, and there may have been a few of them, but the one I'm thinking of that had the original artist was Asquera.
And
I really liked. And so there's a history of good Judge Dredd teaming up with this property.
And I'm blanking on this artist but they do have a piece of preview art. It's by Chris Mooneyham.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's
good.
Gorgeous. It's very sort of just, it's easy to read. It makes Judge Dredd look like a badass.
What I think of is the UK's illustrator style. It's detailed, but it has a little bit of American boldness to it, a little bit of that superhero with British grit.
And you see Dredd yelling, which I love.
You do.
But yeah, no, I can't wait for that. I think Layman is going to have a lot of fun with that.
Yep.
Nick, I'm gonna follow your cue and do a few Dark Horse things real quick.
Yeah, there were a lot of cool Dark Horse.
Dark Horse is having a good month in July. Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned this is all stuff mostly for July.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little after for some of the trades.
Yep. Jeff Lemire, who we've liked any number of projects from him, especially Descender lately.
Yep.
He has a book coming out from, or a series coming out from Dark Horse called Black Hammer, and this is number one hits this month. That month,
yep.
And it is a superhero mystery, using what looks like kind of analogs to sort of, I'm going to say, like Silver Age heroes. They look like Marvel and DC kind of big, bold heroes. It's hard to describe this plot, which is not unusual for Jeff Lemire. I'm going to go and read it. Once they were heroes, but that age is long since passed. Banished from existence by a multiversal crisis, the old champions of Spiral City, Abraham Slam, Golden Gale, Colonel Weird, Madame Dragonfly, and Barbalian? I think so.
Barbalian. Sure.
Now leads simple lives in a timeless farming community. Even as they try to find their way home, Trouble has a unique way of finding heroes wherever they are. And, like I say, I know it is a kind of a dark mystery.
Yeah.
There's art here that looks like classic superhero stuff, and there's art here that looks like kind of a more gritty noir murder mystery. I have enough faith in Lemire at this point to know it's going to be worth checking out.
Yeah.
I expect it's going to have some of those dark elements like Plutonia did. Is that Plutonia the name of the book, right? Yeah, along with some of his presumably genuine love for superheroes.
Yeah.
While I'm in here, I'm just going to mention a handful of smaller Dark Horse things.
Yep.
There's a new Conan series hitting that's sort of notable.
Conan the Slayer,
because Cullen Bunn is writing it. And I wanted to mention two kind of notable ones for the creative team. There's Neil Gaiman. Is writing. They're doing an adaptation of his. Is it a book? Troll Bridge.
Yep.
I don't know it that well, but it's adapted by Colleen Duran, who he worked with on Sandman, and I believe has worked with on other projects.
Yep.
But she's an amazing illustrator, so all the Neil Gaiman fans should turn out for that. And on a similarly sort of literary level, Margaret Atwood has an original graphic novel, and Margaret Atwood is a prose writer best known for The Handmaid's Tale, but who's written all sorts of award-winning fiction.
Yep.
This is called Angel Catbird. It is a little bit weird to describe, but it says a young genetic engineer is accidentally mutated by his own experiment when his DNA is merged with that of a cat and an owl. What follows is a humorous, action-driven, pulp-inspired superhero adventure with a lot of cat puns.
Okay.
It does not sound like her normal thing, like her dystopian Handmaid's Tale, but I, you know, just for raw craft, I feel like it's got to be worth checking out. And the art looks really good, too, from somebody I don't know. Anyway, that's my quick Dark Horse overview.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a quick image overview.
Yeah.
Because I got a few, and I want to just throw these out. There's just four of them.
Sure.
So I'm going to just go run through them real quick. So Image has a bunch of new number ones this month. And first of all, I want to mention Snot Girl, which yeah. is maybe not the most appealing name they could have gone with.
Yep. But the creator is certainly a person you have to pay respect for.
Yeah. So it's Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim doing the writing. And the artist is, it says, newcomer Leslie Hung, who's got a style that reminds me a little bit of Brian Lee O'Malley stuff.
Yep.
Although it's also a little more, I don't know, I think of like Lumberjanes and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's really amazing looking.
But basically it says, who is Lottie Person? Is she a gorgeous, fun-loving social media star with a perfect life or a gross, allergy-ridden mess? Enter a world of snot, blood, and tears in this new ongoing series.
It's so weird sounding, but the preview pages looked good.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. That seems really good. And next up, I'm just going to go through an order, something called The Throwaways, mm-hmm. written by Caitlin Kittredge, who's done some Vertigo books, art by Steven Sanders, who I remember from a variety of things. I remember from a New Warriors reboot in like the 90s. But this is basically a couple of people, a vet with severe PTSD, and a burnout trying to escape the shadow of his infamous father, thrust into a modern-day MK-Ultra conspiracy, and discover they are both Ultra's human experiments. So it sounds like sort of espionage meets sort of psychic warfare. Looks very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have Horizon number one, which is maybe, of all the Image stuff they've announced the last few months, I'm really excited about this. This is a... it's written by Brandon Thomas, who's a writer a lot of people really don't know. He's done some smaller stuff, but I've always liked him. I've been friends with him for a while. I haven't seen him in a few years, but he's always been one of those guys who I thought would break out, and I think this might be his breakout book. Art is by Juan Gedeon, who did Ghost Racers for Marvel, and Frank Martin, who works on East of West. And here's the pitch. Zia Malin thought she'd fought her very last war until she learned her planet was targeted for occupation by a desperate world called Earth. The people of Earth will be told that her arrival on their planet means invasion. These are lies. This is retaliation. So basically, Earth invaded an alien planet, and now one of the aliens is coming back for revenge.
Interesting.
It's a fun pitch. So I'm very excited about that, and it's got beautiful-looking artwork. And then I just want to mention that Chew number 56 comes out in July, and that is the start of the final story arc of Chew. So if you've not been caught up on Chew, soon you'll be able to read the whole thing. And I've been liking it. It gets crazier and crazier, and I just love that book.
That book has a special place in our store's heart.
Yes, it does.
We did the big event for the first graphic novel, and I still miss the thumb cake that we had.
That was great. Nick, what's the next on your list?
All right, I'm going to swing back away from Image and back to DC, because there's a lot to talk about there.
Yep.
And the big ones for me... I'm going to talk about Chew, since you guys are all sort of those like, meh. So, I'm going to take Nightwing Rebirth number one. And I guess Nightwing number one as well. Big one thing for this is it's Tim Seeley written.
Yep.
I mean, he did great things with Grayson. I expect nonetheless nothing less from him from his new Nightwing series.
Yep.
But it's sort of incorporating all the... He's been a Robin, a Batman, a spy, and a ghost. Now Dick Grayson returns to Gotham City to reclaim the life that was taken from him. But when a new evil threatens those he loves most, Nightwing faces being torn away from home once again in order to destroy the Dark Force once and for all. So, and it's got art by Yannick Paquette. I know that's going to be gorgeous. And yep. then on the main series, Javier Fernandez, which I'm not super familiar with that name, but...
There's another new artist. They are bringing a new artist in,
they
which is
are.
Good.
And it looks great. So, I mean, he does the cover for it, and the cover is beautiful.
Looks good. Reminds me of Greg Land when he was at his best on that book.
Yeah, but I love Nightwing. I like the new costume. Mm-hmm. He's back to his blue and black.
And we know it's a good creative team.
Yep. And then the other one is kind of a weird one for me. And it's Red Hood and the Outlaws Rebirth number one.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, it's written by Scott Lobdell, so I'm a little worried about that because... Lobdell has not been a person that I've actually liked in the last couple of years. He just doesn't...
He's got a sort of arcane 90s style to his
writing.
He does. Writing.
He's got kind of a bro style to it.
Yeah.
Which actually sort of fits with Red Hood.
But this one is sort of interesting because the story is about basically Red Hood finding the Dark Trinity in a way.
Yeah.
Because it's him finding a weird Bizarro.
I mean, the DC Trinity.
Yeah,
the
DC Trinity.
Not the biblical Trinity.
The reverse of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
He finds... Bizarro and Artemis, yeah. and then himself. And also, I've seen some preview pages from this special.
Yeah,
I showed it to Randy yesterday.
And the preview pages, art by Dexter Soy, just look great. They're pretty stunning. Actually show Jason stealing the wheels off of the Batmobile again.
Yeah, so flashback to the original 80s story that had been retconned away for a little while.
Yeah, New 52 actually retconned it to him stealing drugs from Leslie Tompkins.
That's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
Stealing the Batmobile's tires is so much more ballsy.
and cool. It also showed Jason eating, like, Batman giving him food and then having, like, sharing a burger on top of the Batmobile.
Right, it's clear that they bond after Batman slaps him down.
Yeah, so that has sort of gotten me excited to see what can be brought with
it's
this.
It's a kind of fun premise.
Yeah.
And the art looked insane.
Yeah. Dave, what you got next?
All right, I'll go ahead and run with the DC trend here, and I'm gonna mention a couple of DC books. I'm only going to briefly touch on one, which is the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, because Robert Venditti's writing these, and I don't know if I've read anything by him that I thought was great, but I liked some of his previous Green Lantern stuff, and I believe he was doing good stuff on EXO or one of those series.
Yeah, he actually did EXO.
The premise here, though, sells it.
What is the premise for it?
Basically, the Green Lantern Corps has been destroyed, and to replace that, it's Sinestro and his Yellow Corps. They have become sort of the world's protectors, but of course within Sinestro's little viewpoint, he must control everything, and Hal comes back.
So it looks like
classic Hal.
Yeah, yeah, and it looks like he will have to figure out how to retake the reins of.
Which I thought was a cool, fun
idea. They're the core. They're protecting what, the whole galaxy?
I think so.
Oh, okay, that's pretty huge.
So you're saying we are not going to have trench coat, long hair, scruffy face Hal anymore?
No, we're going to have classic Green Lantern suited Hal.
Yeah. And as always,
and a power ring.
As with many of these DC relaunches, the art looks pretty exceptional on it.
Yep.
And then I wanted to mention New Superman by, how do you say his name, Randy?
Jin-Lun Wang.
Jin-Lun Yang. Is it Yang or?
Yang.
Yep. This is the Superman that it was glimpsed in the last few pages of this week's, or last week's action.
Maybe.
Really? It looked pretty clearly it was.
There's some misgiving things.
Okay. Well, anyway, the basic premise we know, at least from interviews, which is that the New 52 Superman is going to die, and in some way his power will be imparted to maybe a few different people, one of which is this Chinese superhero, or this Chinese person who I don't think they're a superhero initially.
No, it's a new character.
Who becomes a new Superman. They say the description says an impulsive act of heroism thrusts an arrogant young man into the limelight of Shanghai as China begins to form its own Justice League of powerful heroes, rising from the ashes of the final days of Superman. Award-winning writer Jin-Lun Yang and on the rise art star Victor Bogdanovic introduced readers to Kong Kenan, the new Superman. When the world needed a new hero, China made him, and this fits with some of what I saw in the recent thing where there was like. The Great Ten, I think, there was, I don't know if it was them or like some side group affiliated with them or some mad scientist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely taking one of them. Who was it, Nick? They were making clothes. Somebody who,
she,
the one who gives birth all the time. That's like her weird power. And, that's Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
And they imbued one of them with some sort of with this Superman power.
Okay.
Anyway, the writer is why, you know, this one definitely stands out. And I have a feeling that this character has the potential to do sort of what, say, Ms. Marvel did, which I suspect it's going to be a book that is hopefully a strong character piece first, and where sort of nationality, you don't want it to be left to the side, but I think you need to write sort of a ripping adventure as well as introducing the character, you know, as a kind of a foreign hero that's something new to us.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do on it.
I have to say, just as an aside, I actually really love the costume.
Yeah,
oh, I do too.
Design.
Yeah,
it's and a bit I of an all red variants of Superman's costume.
And that's a big thing for me across all of DC stuff right now. I think the design work is really strong.
They've been releasing a lot of these designs online, and it all looks pretty good.
I mean, the Green Arrow one is really good. I mean, it's kind of Arrow-ish in a lot of ways.
Yeah, what was the three that they just posted? They Green Arrow, Supergirl, and Superboy.
Yeah. And I liked all of those.
Yeah, Supergirl especially was great.
I think, for me, the Green Arrow one was the highlight. They got the facial hair right. He still had the younger look of the, you know, kind of for people who are following it, know the character mainly through Arrow. And something of the armored look that we've seen both on Arrow and, say, in the Injustice games and stuff like that. But I thought a notably superior version of it.
Yeah.
So I've got another DC pick, and this is one that I'm so glad they're doing this. It's one of those, why have you not done this before?
Yeah.
They're doing an original graphic novel called Wonder Woman, The True Amazon, written and drawn by Jill Thompson. Jill Thompson, of course, has done Sandman and Beasts of Burden. Beautiful sort of painted art. This is a fully painted graphic novel, and it is basically about young Diana has the fate of fawning attention of a nation she grows spoiled, but a series of tragic events take their toll, and Diana must learn to grow up, take responsibility, and seize her destiny. It says that it's a fresh standalone interpretation, that it's a fulfillment of her dream project. This sounds really good. It's sort of the early years of Diana, which we've been seeing. Honestly, a little too much of. I want to see Diana as, like, Wonder Woman.
Right.
But Jill Thompson doing the early days of Diana as sort of a mythological thing seems right up her alley.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned Jill Thompson. You have my attention.
And the preview pages look really, really good.
They do.
So, yeah, looking forward to that. Nick, what's next on your list?
All right, another DC property, but not traditional. This is Hanna-Barbera. This is the Flintstones number one.
Right.
Remind me, Mark Russell. I didn't recognize the name.
I don't know the name either.
Okay. I did recognize the art. It's by Steve Pugh, who is the...
I've always liked his stuff.
Yeah, he did Animal Man, if I'm not mistaken, on the new stuff.
Yep. He tends to bounce around on somewhat esoteric projects, but he's really talented, and he has a few different styles I've seen him employ.
Yeah.
But he's always good. He can run the line between cartoony and, like, kind of realistic.
Yep.
Yeah, and it sounds like just this kind of odd take on the Flintstones.
And then they wanted to bring back a little bit more, like, the social satire.
Yeah, it's definitely in that kind of... I'm not going to read all of it because it's, like, it's a little long, but it says, "Welcome to Bedrock, where Paleolithic humans head to dinner for a taste of artisanal mammoth after shopping at Neanderthal and Big Men's Clothing, where Wilma shows her modern art, and where, if you take a plane, you could literally end up sitting on the tail section. Join Fred and Barney as Mr. Slate sends them on a mission to show some Neanderthals a night on the town in hopes of them luring into this new system called working for a living." So it does seem a little like that, but I honestly think the Flintstones need kind of a refreshing. And
sure.
I've watched so many of the Flintstones cartoons growing up, and I think the art style looks really, really cool. I've seen character design work for it, and the idea behind some of these stories has me very interested.
When you think about, like, the things that they can spoof now are phones, for one thing.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know what they're going to come up with precisely to represent that, but I am sure it is right for the picking.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll have likable characters. You know, Fred and Barney should have a good bromance, and Betty and Wilma as well should have a good bromance.
A womance.
Yeah, I don't know if there's an equivalent of it.
And I think I think both the kids, Bam Bam and
Pebbles,
are grown up, so it's teenager style.
Okay, so that's maybe just...
So it gives another little you know, shift into the time. So I don't know, it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to it.
Dave, what's your next pick?
Let's throw a few Marvel things out here.
All right.
I am interested to read the Civil War II Kingpin thing that's coming up.
Yeah.
Which shows how, like, I guess amidst all the craziness going on, he is trying to maintain his power. There it is. I don't know the writer, Matthew Rosenberg.
One of the Black Masks books.
Okay.
Oh, no, it wasn't Black Mask. I keep missing it. It's a Boom book called... Welcome Back.
Okay.
And he also did, I believe, he's the writer on Four Kids Walking to a Bank.
Okay. I was reminded of the premise as I'm looking at it here, that there's an Inhuman who can predict the future, and so they're clamping down on crime, sort of Minority Report style, before it happens. And so how do you run your criminal empire when you're up against that? Kingpin is one of those guys, when he's well done, he's very watchably sinister.
Yeah.
And I would like to see both him twisting the wind over this, and I would like to see how he's going to maybe overcome it.
Yeah.
Randomly, I wanted to mention Scarlet Witch number 8, which is a day in the life story that looks like it's kind of dealing with her past and her kind of her sins, you know, her no more mutants, no doubt,
right.
and some of the stuff that Bendis foisted upon her.
Sure.
And I'll be curious to see how he can come to terms with that. And I'm just going to mention one other book. There's a prelude to the Doctor Strange movie that I feel like people just should know about that. It's a little two-parter that they're doing. Let's see. They say a powerful ancient relic has been stolen from the British Museum. Relic that could do significant damage in the wrong hands. Enter the Masters of the Mystic Arts. Team is on a mission to find the relic and the mysterious mystic who stole it. But will they be able to track her down before it's too late? If you're getting Doctor Strange fever, know that even before the movie comes out, there will be some comic book tie-ins.
Yep. All right. I want to mention a couple of Archie projects. First of all, we've had Jughead, we've had Archie, both of which have been really good. They're now doing the third leg of those sort of revamps of it, and they're doing Betty and Veronica, which is by Adam Hughes.
Yep.
And
Adam Hughes, best known as an artist.
Yes. And he does sort of cheesecakey stuff, but so far all these launches have been good. I'm excited.
He also has written some good stuff like that Gen 13 Superman back in the day.
Yeah,
that was
Hughes has some writing chops. This has, what, 15 different covers? 20 different covers?
It's like 20, 25.
Yeah.
And another one where they're going to all be good again.
Yeah, they're all
good. It's Veronica Fish, it's Francisco Francavilla, some people, Zdarsky does one, of course.
Yep.
Erica Henderson does one. I mean, it's like everybody that is great in comics right now doing a cover.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what they do. And then also they're collecting...
I guess it's going
to
be sort of a frenemies kind of book, right?
Yeah, probably. And then they're collecting the much-delayed but awesome Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is that scary... She's a witch.
Period piece witch story with Sabrina,
which is really good. all right. We should probably do one more pick each, and then we'll run through our list in speed mode. So, Nick, what's your last big pick?
My last big pick is a book from Aftershock.
Okay.
And this is called Captain Kidd number 1.
Yeah.
A big thing for me is it's Mark Waid.
Yes.
And that gets my attention. This is about Chris Vargas is a middle-aged man with a hacking cough and an obsolete job and a bombastic secret. Whenever he likes, he can transform into the teenage superhero Captain Kidd. So
it's like reverse Captain Marvel.
It's like reverse Shazam,
Marvel.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think
I know how Waid thinks about these things, he's going to have thought it through in cool ways.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And art by Tom Payer, which, again...
Tom Payer's a co-writer.
Oh, Tom Payer's co-writer. Art by Wilfredo Torres.
We've seen on stuff, and I can't remember what we've seen him on.
Yeah. Anyways... I think it's a fun concept. I think Mark Waid and Tom Payer will probably bring to light some things up that unconventional thinking, and it'll be a lot of fun.
And while you're mentioning that, I want to shoot over to the next page, is Aftershock. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, this is Life Spanners, which is by Tim Seeley. So,
who we were just talking about.
I was like Tim Seeley.
Art by Gus Storm. Do you remember the concept on this one, Randy?
I don't off the top of my head.
In the near future, a superpowered teenage girl wipes the heavily disputed old city of Jerusalem off the face of the earth. Now in the politically charged world of the Lady Last Word incident, a clickbait headline-writing journalist holds the key to a medtech conspiracy that could allow people to buy superpowers. At the cost of shortening their lifespan.
Interesting.
That is a fun concept.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of new publishers. There's always new publishers coming out, and a lot of them just kind of flop. There's not enough vision. But Aftershock has a good creative roster and some interesting concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Black Mask. There's a couple of guys who are sort of standing out right now as maybe the next Valiant or Oni or one of those guys. And Aftershock's definitely worth a look, and these two definitely caught my attention.
Yes, they got some serious creators on that.
Dave, what's your final big pick?
My final big pick is two number ones. I'm cheating my final big pick.
Fair enough.
Because they'll be quick. One is ROM number one, which I wanted to be sure to mention from IDW.
Yep.
It's been previewed on Free Comic Book Day.
And I liked it quite a bit.
And it was good. And the official number one is hitting. So whether you're an old school fan of the property or want to see what all those people were talking about, check it out. And then also Faith number one, the breakout character from Valiant recently had a 4-issue miniseries, I believe. Was kind of what put her on the map, and now she's getting her ongoing, and the first issue hits that month. That is that is all the last of my big guns.
All right. So my last pick, I'm gonna pick from sort of the back of the book. There is a book called The Drawing Lesson.
Yeah, I saw that.
That is a how to draw book, which we occasionally get requests for that kind of thing. And it is by Mark Crilly,
yes,
who did Akiko, which I wish someone would put back in print.
Mickey Falls, which is getting new prints
this month, all getting back in print. And if you haven't, I think we've talked about it before. Mickey Falls is sort of a manga romance kind of thing.
It's in the shoujo style.
Yeah.
But like really well done. It's actually a beautiful story, and it is an angsty love story with supernatural elements that, yep, I would easily recommend to anybody.
Yeah, and he also, of course, had what's the book? Brody's Ghost from Dark
Brody's
Horse.
Ghost. This is his shonen one, his action one.
But yeah, this is a how to draw book by a very accomplished cartoonist.
Yeah, I'm for sure picking it up. I'd love for it to. I don't know quite how its approach will be. It's a graphic novel that teaches you as you read it,
yeah,
to how to produce a graphic novel.
It's a neat idea.
And I feel like he could pull this off. I'd love to have a good how to draw book, how to do comics book, kind of, that's not the old how to draw comics the Marvel way. And it's maybe not quite necessarily as scholarly as some of the Scott McCloud stuff. Something,
yeah,
somewhere in between.
I agree. All right. Speed round. Nick, what else is on your list?
I have, let's see, He Took Rum. There's a book called Sombra, which I'm forgetting the just.
Sombra is in Boom, and yeah, it looks good. I can't remember. Oh, it's like a Mexican Cartels. It's Justin Jordan writing.
Right. Justin Jordan is the name that kind of caught my attention.
It's like a real life crime book set against the backdrop of Mexican cartel warfare.
Right. It looked really interesting.
Yep.
The first volume of Spider-Man Deadpool got announced.
Yep. Which the Zero issue comes out this week, or the Zero trade comes out this,
yep,
week.
And then I think the final one was the first volume of the Wonder Woman by Perez, which,
yep,
I like, oh, to see that is back in print.
Yep, and they're putting it out in those like larger sized formats
that they have. It's the first 14 issues.
Yep. Yeah, that's big for me. That's my favorite era of Wonder Woman, and so I will easily recommend it.
Dave, what else?
I wanted to mention that they're doing a big X-23 collection. I think people,
yep,
who are enjoying All-New Wolverine, yep, will probably want to check that out. It's one of those, it's a big 456-page thing, so you're going to get a lot of comics in there.
Yep.
They're collecting Superman, Lois, and Clark by Dan Jurgens, which is the pre-52 Superman, how he kind of came to live on the regular DC world.
Right.
Basically sets up the new Superman that's about to be coming,
yeah,
out. And there's a beautiful Batgirl figure, the Batgirl of Burnside Deluxe action figure. I think, does she actually have her motorcycle on it?
She does.
Yeah. It's just stunningly made, so if you're a figure person. Kong of Skull Island.
Yep.
From, is it Dynamite?
That's Boom.
Boom?
I thought it was Boom.
Which, I don't have it in front of me, so I actually can't check. Nick, do you mind checking page 310? I believe this might be a silent issue, which would sort of make sense.
Interesting.
Because it's before they find him, and it's about, like, his existence on the island, I guess among, you know, like, the tribesmen and the other dinosaurs and stuff like that that are on the island.
It does not say silent issue or anything.
Okay, maybe that was just something in my
head. It is through Boom. It is a 6-issue miniseries.
Yep.
By James Asmus and Carlos Magno.
Yep.
And last I wanted to mention, Disney has Disney's Frozen. It's an ongoing series, I think, sort of further adventures,
yep,
in that world. Oh, and there's an Art of ElfQuest book, which is mainly for me, but for other ElfQuest fans out there, there's an art book coming out. You want it.
Okay, my final list. Avatar's got three things this month. The Library Collection of Smoke and Shadow. Mm-hmm. The newest one, which I believe is called North and South, which I think is going to be the North Water Tribe and the South Water Tribe and that stuff. And then a collection of posters that looks really interesting. There's the artist editions, which IDW does. I always like. And they're doing one that's actually a little bit cheaper. It's still pricey, but it's full color. And it's a hardcover collection of the Bill Sienkiewicz New Mutants, his entire run.
It's full color.
It's full color.
So it's not an artist edition in that traditional sense.
No, this is more like an absolute.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, a full-color collection
is a great, great era.
It's a great run. Yeah, so I'm looking forward. It's limited to 999 copies.
Do we know what the actual price is?
No, off the top of my head, I think it's like $100.
Huh.
It's not super bad.
I may have to consider that one. That's one of those special, yeah, ones for me.
Speaking of awesome artists, they're doing Boom is doing a book called The Signature Art of Brian Stelfreeze.
Yep.
Which you may know him from Black Panther currently, but he's done a ton of beautiful painted art. And the previews for this art book, which is $50, 200 pages, has some pages he did, some look like a James Brown portrait, a Man with No Name portrait.
So like some looks like commercial work and like poster style stuff, along with probably his comic stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah, so it's going to be good. I wanted to mention The Paybacks, which is coming out from, I believe, Heavy Metal, mostly because it was written by awesome local Donnie Cates, who did the Interceptor that we liked, or at least that I liked. And The Paybacks is, I believe, was already a Dark Horse series, and this is sort of a return. It's a new first issue. But the pitch on this one is, the secret identities of the world's superhero community have been leaked to the press, and the blame has fallen on our team of super indebted losers. It's The Paybacks versus the whole dang world. So it sounds like sort of a goofy, you know, Mystery Men style superheroes pitted right. against everybody. And then I wanted to mention there's a new publisher that is doing all female written comics. Seems like almost a pitch here. It's a Jet City, who are the people who have those Hedge Knight trades.
Yeah, yeah.
They are producing three new books this month called Girl Over Paris, number one, Mayhem and Magic, and Time Trial. And Girl Over Paris is written by Kate Leth and has art by Ming Doyle from The Kitchen and Constantine. It's also written by Gwenda Bond, who is a writer, like a book writer. She had a book called Lois Lane Fallout. And it's set within the world of exotic, magical Cirque American.
Okay.
So acrobatic thrills and ghostly chills in the catacombs of Paris.
Okay, that actually sounds pretty cool.
Mayhem and Magic is written by Alex DeKempe with art by Dennis Calero. It's a freelance thief stealing a magical relic, so sort of Dresden Files-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then Time Trial number one is written by Heather Nofier from My Little Pony, art by Augustin Padilla from Smallville, and it is about 19-year-old Cleo Dunn, who her world-saving, time-traveling parents get a low profile. She yearns for her own adventure, so in the fall of 1931, she packs her bags and heads to Chicago. And winds up at the trial of Al Capone. Now she's got to jump through time to keep the past, present, and future safe. These are all fun concepts.
I feel, yeah, these have good hooks and some strong creators on there.
Finally, one last thing I want to mention is something called Brick, B-R-I-K. It's from Oni Press. It's written by Adam Glass, who writes for Supernatural. Art is by Mike Benson, who does Deadpool and Moon Knight. It's a $2 intro page, and it's a bullied kid in New York. His family faces encroaching violence from Russian gangsters, and before his beloved grandfather is killed in an attempt to muscle the family out of the neighborhood, he's able to pass down and drew the story of a mysterious but dangerous protector who helped their people during troubled times. It sounds like basically the Gollum, if you remember the Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray Gollum series they did. It sounds like something like that, basically the Gollum brought to life in modern day New York.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like fun. And the final thing I want to mention, Star Wars hardcovers. There's two more coming out from Marvel. There's the Force Awakens one, which is going to contain the prologue. And then there's the Heroes, which has a bunch of the miniseries, like Lando and Princess Leia.
Okay, yeah.
So if you've been waiting on a hardcover for that, wait no more.
Nice.
That's it. That's all I've got. That about wraps up our previews review for this month. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about our comics for the week. We are talking comics for Wednesday, May 11th, and it's a, if not necessarily a lighter week, there's more sort of trades and stuff, so we may blaze through this a little quicker than usual. But Dave, why don't you kick us off with your pick?
All right, my pick is a tried and true one, but I can't help how much I like this book. Archie, this is Archie number 8
from the
relaunched line of Archie. You know, a friend of mine was just posting, Les was posting on Facebook earlier today. I think he probably, through the free comic book day, Archie, which reprinted the great first issue, that was probably his first experience with it, and he was shocked at how much he enjoyed it.
That was on free comic book day, that was the biggest thing, is I kept telling people, try Archie.
Yep.
And they're like, really? I'd get either the Archie or, oh yeah, I just love Archie when I was a kid. And none of those people are going to know what they're getting when they pick up Archie number one, because it's such a different, great first issue. Mm-hmm. I expect to see a lot of people picking up that book who didn't know about it.
Yep. This issue does what we've come to kind of expect from this series, which is have both some really strong humor, but a little bit more emotional content that was traditional with Archie. In this case, Veronica, who he's been dating, her dad really, really hates Archie. He's a rich a-hole, and he hates Archie the doofus. And so he is kind of trying to do something to separate Archie from his daughter, And what happens is, what Archie pieces together is his dad gets a big promotion. His dad happens to work for, I don't know if he works directly for Lodge, but he works for, like, the company that Lodge owns.
Yeah.
He gets a thing that's going to transfer him to Singapore. And he's very excited, though. It's, like, getting a raise, and it's based on an idea he had, and he's really proud of it.
Yep.
And Archie manages to puzzle out that this
was... You mean Archie or Jughead?
Archie.
Oh, okay.
Archie puzzles out that this is designed to just split up he and Veronica and get him out of there. But he doesn't want to tell his dad about it because it's going to shatter his dad, who was really proud of the promotion and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene that is sort of typical of, like, I thought a good little exchange of dialogue between Archie and Jughead. Archie's telling Jughead, he's like, he's so proud of himself, the truth would crush him. And Jughead says, I know crushing people is the truth's hobby. And I was like, that's kind of a good little line there.
Their reinvention of Jughead may be even better than any of the other characters they've done.
It's true. It's true. He became like kind of a wise in the chillest way possible.
He's like the shaman.
Yes, he is.
He stands outside from the rest of them and he helps them out.
Shaman with his eyes kind of half open.
Yeah, yeah. Stoner Shaman.
There is also some very funny stuff in this, including Veronica trying to come up with a ruse to trick her dad into thinking that the red hair he found on her shirt is not Archie's, and she's like trying to go to the pet store and find, and she's like, oh, that's my new cat, you know, and she's trying to find a cat that exactly matches the orange of his hair and stuff. So there's some very funny stuff in it, but yeah, at its heart, there was that kind of serious stuff between Archie and his dad and trying to figure that out. So another awesome issue of it. And I think a pretty, you know, even though there's storylines afoot, you could jump in on this one easily.
I need to catch up on that one, I think. Yeah. Nick, what you got?
I'm going to talk about Grizzly Shark Returns.
Yes.
Grizzly Shark, the surprise comedic hit of a month or so ago.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it was your pick.
It's basically a little mini-series by Ryan Ottley, who both writes and draws it.
Turns out he's got a great sense of humor.
He does indeed have a pretty great sense of humor.
Pretty effed up.
I mean, if you like to see land sharks mauling people... this is the book tailor-made for you.
Yes.
But it's also sort of the ongoing adventures of this half-man that has been eaten in half. Yes. And
he's okay, though.
He's okay,
all right. He's lost his lower torso, but he bucked up.
Sure.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And sort of...
that can happen.
Kind of a strong man, but is kind of dull.
Super doofus.
Yeah, super doofus.
By the way, Nick, as you're flipping through it, and I didn't get a chance to read the second issue yet,
yes,
but I do see that it delivers on the promise of Grizzly Shark, just like the first one did, with it by its second page.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
is horribly mauled and by this.
Oh, there's a montage sequence of people being horribly mauled.
I would expect no less.
There's also a pinup that features a Winnie the Pooh reference, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes. But there's also sort of some added bonuses of, you know, little tremors, nods, like getting a scientist involved, and I mean, it's just insane and crazy and laugh out loud.
It's
funny.
Kind of gorily hilarious.
Yep, and like Randy said, there's some great pinups in the back by various artists. I thought the kind of land shark bear mix by James Herron was amazing.
It's actually very nicely drawn.
It is, but overall. It's just a funny book. It really is.
I don't
it
usually
just
even go for
laugh.
Kind of funny comics. This one got to me.
And I have to say, the tease for the next issue, it's Grizzly Shark versus Sea Bear.
Yeah.
Has me extremely excited.
Yep. Randy, what you got?
All right. I'm picking trades this week. There's a lot of single issues I liked, but these are two of my favorite trades, so I'm going to pick in trades. First thing I'm going to pick is the Avengers Epic Collection. They've been doing these epic collections. This is, I think, like the seventh one they've done of Avengers. And what they do is they collect them out of order. So they collect, like, the best stories. But ideally, what they're going to do eventually, they will all be, like, a series long volume. So this is volume 16 of the Avengers run. But you don't have to read what's gone before. Basically, it's eventually going to be a big, like, 30-volume series.
Yeah, this was in the 80s, and
so these
books stood alone in a lot of ways anyway.
They cover a year. So this is 1986 to 1987, has Avengers 264 to 277, Annual number 15, Alpha Flight number 39, and West Coast Avengers Annual number 1. This gives you the sense of what it would have been like if you were reading the Avengers in that year.
Yeah.
And this was the year that I discovered Marvel in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. this is where I came in on Avengers. This is Roger Stern writing, John Buscema on art, Tom Palmer inking. And it starts with the Wasp meeting a new female evil Yellow Jacket, and then goes on to tell a big epic the Secret Wars tie-in stories.
Oh, yeah.
And then Secret Wars 2, sorry, The Beyonder on Earth.
Yep.
Then it does a big Kang time-traveling epic story.
Is there a Wraith in there?
There's a Dire Wraith because they're in Limbo. And then it tells probably my favorite and maybe the best Avengers story ever, which is Mansion Siege, where the Masters of Evil take over Avengers Mansion and...
They put the hurt on the Avengers as never before.
And the Avengers have to regroup and try and take the mansion back. And this team is my favorite Avengers team ever. It's got the Black Knight. It's got Monica Rambeau when she was Captain Marvel. It's got Captain America, Thor, Submariner. And it's kind of... there's a controversy and Submariner joining because everyone thinks of him as a bad guy.
Yeah.
And Captain America sort of vouching for him.
Because they served in World War II.
It's got the Wasp as leader. It's got Hercules. It's a great team. And it's just really, really good stuff. The trade is $40. If you have a Rogue card and you pick it up this week, you'll get a discount because it's my pick.
Yeah.
So give this a shot. It is such a great Avengers series.
Yep. And for those who don't know John Buscema's art, who draws probably about at least half those stories,
yep.
he was one of the great realists of his era.
Yep.
He channeled the energy of Kirby, but he had, like, the beautiful realism of, like, a Neil Adams
yes.
or something like that. And it was, like, that combination doesn't always work, but he was the guy who made it work.
Also, Avengers versus Kang, Avengers versus Masters of Evil?
Yeah.
That's classic stuff.
It really is.
All right. My cheater pick is also a trade, and it's a newer one. It is called Daredevil Back in Black Chinatown. And this is the collection of the Charles Soule Ron Garney Daredevil.
Just kicked off recently.
Yeah, which is... Daredevil, Matt Murdock has somehow put his identity back in the box. Nobody knows who he is. He has a new costume that is mostly black. He has a sidekick, a kid from Chinatown who is named Blindspot. And he's
mentoring him, right?
And yeah, and he is taking on a crime organization called Ten Fingers, which is sort of mystical ninjas kind of thing. And it has beautiful art by Ron Garney in this sort of reddish-tinged black-and-white style.
Probably the best art Garney's done, possibly ever.
Yeah. And it involves... And also Daredevil, Matt Murdock is now working as a prosecutor.
Right. He's always been a defense attorney previously.
So lots of twists and turns. Sewell, of course, is an attorney, and so the lawyer stuff rings true. The fight stuff is good. Sewell is maybe one of the best writers Marvel has right now. I won't say the best, because I'm not sure I want to make that claim. That's a bold claim. But
he's up there.
Potentially the best. He's definitely one of the greats. And this is just a great opening story on a run that, honestly, the hill it had to get over was I loved the Mark Waid run.
Right.
And I thought I might be kind of done with Daredevil
right,
for a while.
Walk away.
But, man, this is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is the first issue I've actually read of All New, All Different Avengers. This
yep.
happens to be issue 9. You guys have been telling me it's really good. I believe, Randy, you're in particular
one of my favorite books.
Boosting it.
Yep.
I decided to try this one out because it looked like it was a standalone issue, and it
is.
And it also somewhat ties in directly with the free Comic Book Day offering that was the
Civil War II.
The Civil War II special, which, if you read it, had a backup story featuring the new Wasp, who was a Russian woman.
Yeah.
And it told you a little bit about her origin. Well, here she comes into contact with the Avengers, and the story is sort of framed by their old the butler, Jarvis, from back when they had Avengers Mansion and stuff. They have like a hangar or something
yeah.
right now.
Yeah, they're an abandoned Stark hangar, I think.
Yeah, it is not the nicest place, and it's like they're slumming it.
Yeah.
And
he's not so sure about his life choices.
Not so sure about the life choices, and into this suddenly comes several weird things at once. The new Wasp, a weird malfunction from the Vision that seemed like he's skipping in and out of time. To me, it was a really good issue to jump in on because I got to see kind of like all the big heroes and the sort of the trainee group that has Miles Morales, Spider-Man.
Yep.
It's got Miss Marvel.
New Nova.
The New Nova, and I got to see them interacting. I have to say, I really like the look of the Vision in this. I had to warm up to it because I'm such a fan of the old costume, but I'm digging how they're drawing him here, and it does feel like more tied into the movie Vision that we saw in Civil War.
Yeah, I do. Like you, I miss the classic costume, but they did a good job with this one.
And it's, anyway, it's a, I don't want to say too much, but it's a standalone story that reveals some big things about the new Wasp and some big things about, you know, there's big plot twists, but in the end it is all wrapped up. So if you're wanting to check out the new Avengers and with the movie hitting and stuff, Civil War, this seems as good a time as any. I feel like this is a good issue to just stumble into if you don't just grab the trade.
Yep. And this is one of my favorite books and I love what they did with the Wasp.
Nick, what you got? Yeah, I do. I really like the new Wasp too.
Yeah, she's a good character. I have the 11th issue of Deadpool, and this is marks the end of the story arc that has seen Deadpool fight Sabretooth, mainly because
I thought Sabretooth was a good guy now.
But Deadpool blames Sabretooth for the death of his family.
Does he really?
Yes.
Well, they've got that's like serious personal.
Yes, and business. And this issue sees Deadpool sort of confronted with lots of truths. Magneto shows up.
Look at that artist. I kind of dig that art.
This art is by Matteo Lolli.
I have no idea who that is, but it looks pretty good.
Yeah. So it's dealing with some serious stuff. Through the lens of Deadpool, so there's a lot of humor in there, right. But
I'm getting a more serious vibe overall.
Yeah, and then Magneto shows up and things go a little sideways.
Yeah,
because you know Magneto.
That'll happen. Sure.
But no, it was a great ending to the story arc. So Deadpool, fantastic.
All right. So let's go through our list of whatever stuff we got. Nick, what else you got on your stack?
All right. So this is also a pretty big thing. Heavy Metal number 280.
Yep.
Tomorrow, and that is the first issue of Grant Morrison's reign over at All Things Heavy Metal.
Yep.
I think the notable thing here is that none of us had a chance to really read it, because it's sort of a thicker anthology book.
Yeah. I did read his story. He does have an actual story in there.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
And I thought it was a really fun idea. I've always liked Heavy Metal.
He also has, for those of you who like Dave, like hear Grant Morrison's thoughts on things, a big like 3-page intro where his philosophy is, and
it's very Morrison.
Very Morrison.
Yeah. Then I've got the 52 issue of Batman, which is sort of a send off to the series in a lot of ways, but it's written by James Tynion IV. And art by Riley Rosmo. And I have to say, Riley Rosmo does an amazing job with Batman.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really, really good. The second issue of House of Penance, the Peter Tomasi, Ian Bertram horror book, it gets even more horrific, and it's a lot of fun. The third issue of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which just continues to be good. The second issue of the Image Book of the Fix.
Which we both loved.
Which we both love. I thought this one was not as funny as the first.
It's meaner. But it's a little meaner.
It's really mean.
It's kind of dark, but it's still funny.
It's still funny. The second issue of Gwenpool.
Yep.
Which is winning me over a little bit. I think I love the art, but they're utilizing some characters. I will say Batroc the Leaper shows up, and he's not pwned.
I'm sorry. Who?
Batroc the Leaper.
The Leaper.
Oh, Batroc the Leaper.
The Leaper, yeah. Yes.
We love Batroc.
Yes. And it was nice to see him actually utilized really, really well. And then my last one, which I'm sure is in everybody's pile, is Black Panther number 2.
Yep, as Ta-Nehisi Coates. It's a complicated story he's telling.
He's approaching it in kind of with a complicated story, but man, I'm actually really, really digging it.
He's building up Wakanda.
He is, and I think that's smart.
Yeah.
It needs to happen. It needs to be a little bit more fleshed out. And I think Stelfreeze's art is gorgeous.
Yep. Dave, what else is on your stack?
Let's see. Did we mention Adventures of Supergirl?
Nope.
So, tying into the TV show, which may or may not get a second season, who knows, but we really like the show.
Yes.
This is a comic spinoff of it. This is going to be like new adventures within that setting.
Yeah.
And it's a good first issue. It actually has really nice, particularly nice art, I thought.
By Bengal.
Yeah.
Who's done a variety of things. I believe he did some of the Wolverine, maybe?
Maybe so.
He's done something for Marvel.
Yeah.
There is a new issue. I didn't get around to reading this. Randy, I think you did, but there's a new Darth Vader.
So Darth Vader number 20 starts off. They're off that mining planet. And so there's two stories in here. The lead one is has Darth Vader and the Emperor sort of talking. And it's a pretty explicit look at sort of the master-student relationship they've got and what it's like to be the head of the dark side, and really interesting. And it also has a confrontation between Vader and another one of his foes. But really, the star of the show is the backup, in which BT and Triple Zero go to see a junk dealer or and a weapons dealer and a
the
mechanic
and torture droids.
And yes. And we get a little more on their history, and it's amazing as always when you get those two.
The only other ones I had in my stack were there's the third issue of Rocketeer at War.
Yep.
And I did want to mention that especially if you're in on Wednesday, but we'll probably have them through it for the next week or two. There's a little Scooby-Doo, Apocalypse, and Hanna-Barbera overall, like a preview of all the Scooby and Hanna-Barbera books and stuff coming out from them. It's just a little freebie handout, but it's got lots of art. It's got the explicit premise spelled out on them.
Yep.
And if you've been curious about any of those, Future Quest especially, but like Scooby, Apocalypse, Flintstones, any of that stuff, grab a free copy while it should be floating around the store.
I've got three more to mention, single issue wise, and then a lot of trades. 4001 AD, Exo Manowar number one. This is actually a story of the past of the Valiant Universe. It goes back into what happened when New Japan launched 100 years from now, and then the countermeasures they created in 2121. They basically create like a core of Exo Manowar giant robots across the world to go take on Japan. It's a really interesting story of what happened when New Japan first created and the United Nations of the world decided to try and stand up to them. It's a good little prologue that's going to, I'm sure, lead into the new Exo Manowar armor being in 4001 AD. I'm really liking their 4001 AD crossover so far. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has another issue. They're out of standoff now. And the reveal of who is in the fake Iron Man armor is a good reveal. And it guest stars Spider-Man. It's a really good... I've been really liking the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Book so far. And Silk number 8 continues the Spider-Women story. Has really nice guest art by Tana Ford. And also features Mockingbird and Black Cat. And so you know I'm all on board that.
I also like that cover, which is a sort of Usual Suspect style police lineup with her on it.
Yeah. It reminds me of the old Adam Hughes Catwoman.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I want to mention a bunch of trades this week. Rutabaga the Adventure Chef Feasts of Fury. This is a chef in an adventurer's world, in like a fantasy adventurer's world. He's like the bard, but instead of singing and dancing and telling stories, he cooks. And it's the first volume was hilarious and fun. The second volume I'm really excited to get. There's the collection of All New Wolverine by Tom Taylor and David Lopez, which puts X-23 in the costume. We've been talking this book up. It's some of the best art you'll see. It's a great action book. It guest stars the Wasp and Doctor Strange. Really, really great stuff.
That's the new Wasp?
No. The Janet. Janet Van Dyne. That's right. I did know she was alive. I'd forgotten.
I was going to say, we were debating this earlier.
Birthright Volume 3, which has a few more twists and turns in this sort of urban fantasy series that we all love. Chew Volume 11, which is the penultimate trade, which sees... Mason and Tony sort of going at each other more directly. Grayson Volume 3, which wraps the original run of the Dick Grayson as a spy, has that beautiful Mikkel Jennen art.
Very successful experiment,
yeah.
I gotta say.
Then Radioactive Spider-Gwen Volume 1, which picks up with the new series that they just started out of the post-Secret War Spider-Gwen. And then a couple of hardcovers. A 20th anniversary edition of Mark Waid and Alex Ross's Kingdom Come.
Good Lord, 20th anniversary.
Yeah. Which is, of course, the sort of dark future story where the new extreme heroes, the young legacy heroes, are causing problems, and the old heroes, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, all have to come out of retirement to deal with them. It's a great apocalyptic story. I don't have this in collection. I bought it in single issues. Mm-hmm. So I'm very tempted by this nice, deluxe, oversized hardcover.
About as iconic as it gets for the superheroes of the 90s. You know, basically one of the most notable stories of the whole decade.
And then maybe the most fun book of the week, Little Marvel Standee Punch-Out Book. This is a nice little hardcover. It's all those little characters that Scotty Young does, where he's done probably almost every character in the Marvel Universe. They're die-cut characters. There's 9 pages of die-cut characters that you can pop out and make a little army of standees in Scotty Young style.
And they're sort of like cool little cardboard heroes if you did RPGs, or paper dolls or whatever you want to call them. But all Scotty Young.
I don't need more stuff on bookshelves and that kind of thing, but I'm very tempted by this book.
You can have little Scotty Young characters fighting it out across your desk.
It's very tempting. If you have an office or a cubicle to decorate, I would highly recommend it. All right, that's our comics for the week. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm going to go ahead and give you guys a spoiler warning now. If you have not seen Civil War, close out the podcast now. Come back when you have. We'll be back next week with more. Yo-Jo, all that. If you have seen Civil War, stick around after the break. We're going to give our spoiler review of Captain America Civil War. Okay, we are going to give you our spoiler review of Captain America: Civil War. This is your final warning. We're going to talk about this movie and give spoilers. If you've not seen it and you don't want to get spoiled, stop listening now.
Yeah, big plot twists.
Giant Man.
Giant Man.
I'm just starting with it.
Yeah. Maybe the most giddy I've been in a movie in like the last year or two.
When he starts talking about, I mean, I'm sure like me, you were like, yeah. He's talking about, I've got something big. It's something I've done a lot. Okay, I've done it once in a lab. And we're all like, oh, we know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah. I had to turn and I was like, I think I was sitting next to Tila and I was like, I think he's going to grow giant. I was like, I was that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like when you saw,
like, yeah, we know doofus.
It was like when you saw Thanos at the end of the movie or when you see the helicarrier show up in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
It was that cool moment.
Yeah. And you know what else was great about it is like, for like about 5 minutes in like a massive 20-minute fight scene, like for a quarter of it.
Yeah.
Ant-Man was like the guy to beat.
Yep.
He was just like kicking the crap out of
people. He was slapping people around.
Taken out by a Disney or a Star Wars reference.
Yes. Yes. But the great thing about it was that Paul Rudd, of course, is hilarious. Yes. And so he's not doing the like, come at me, bro. He's just like sort of, ooh, sorry about that. It was funny. It was
laugh manically a little bit.
A little bit, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit of a power trip.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Incidentally, even before he did that, the amazing sequence where Hawkeye like launches him into Iron Man's armor was cool enough just on its own. He's running around in there. It's funny. He's like doing his thing here. He's like, I'm your conscience.
I'm your conscience,
star.
Yeah.
Him throwing a truck, a miniaturized truck.
Think it's a water truck and it's a fuel truck.
it's a fuel truck.
Yep. Yeah, Ant-Man definitely. But overall, we loved this movie.
Yep. Yes.
Very good.
As everyone did.
I will say, though, it does not beat Winter Soldier for me.
I'm not sure. I've seen it twice now, and I love Winter Soldier. But Civil War is, I think about it more, is gaining on me. It's because it's an Avengers movie, and I love the Avengers. So
I think because... It's a little bit more unwieldy just because of all those characters and stuff, and it can't have the focus that Winter Soldier
had. Yeah, that's true.
And that's why I think I would still give the nod to Winter Soldier as well. But it's Civil a different pleasure, and I'd say, for instance, I might have liked it more than Avengers 1 or 2.
I love Avengers beyond all reason, so nothing's ever going to supplant that for me. But this did have probably the best superhero fight we've ever seen on screen, which is that airport fight.
You know... Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this when I saw the trailer where they run at each other.
Yeah.
I kind of thought that was like the equivalent of those old comic covers where it's like, well, they used it for the trailer. It's not really going to be in the movie.
It sure is.
And I was like, not only was it in the movie, but it like led to like this massive fight scene, which I didn't quite think we were going to get it in that one.
Spider-Man was like, they're not stopping.
Yeah.
Spider-Man. Let's talk about him.
Oh man, there's Spider-Man. Best version of Spider-Man we've seen on the screen.
Yep.
By far.
So. Although the interesting thing is, it's not my Spider-Man.
No, it's a different take.
My Spider-Man, you know, when I came into it, well, he was in college at that point. And this is definitely a little bit more Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Even right down to like an Aunt May who's still pretty young.
And kind of hot.
And kind of hot, yeah. That was Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei.
With Tony Stark kind of scamming on that.
Yeah, there's an online joke where they call her Aunt February.
I did love what they did with him. I thought it's a great new take. It kind of, given that the movies have, I like the first two Maguire movies pretty well, but they're still very Sam Raimi-ish.
And kind of dour.
A little bit, yeah. They never got Spider-Man's jokey side, which this movie definitely did.
Yes.
And then, you know, you had, two movies after that that I don't even think I saw.
I saw the first one.
I didn't see the second one. But I kind of lost track of those ones. And I do think you probably, to kind of reintroduce Spider-Man yet again so close to the others, you probably needed to do something that was pretty different. And they did.
I think that's a good call.
Real kid.
There's a lot of things. They're in an apartment, not a house. He's definitely more of a kid. And here's the thing. All I wanted from Spider-Man was to quip.
Yep.
And man, did he quip.
Yep.
I did see a girl sitting next door in the apartment building, and I was wondering if that was Mary Jane.
That could be.
Just
a new take on a Mary Jane, yeah.
Just the girl literally next door.
I also like they have Stark build his costume.
Yep.
Which is an answer to a problem I didn't have. But a lot of people are like, how come Spidey makes this? He's this kid. He's struggling. He doesn't have any money. How can he sew this badass costume?
Right.
And there's your answer. Tony Stark made it for him.
Right. And you saw before he had a very homemade looking
costume. Yes, he did. And that was really funny. I also thought
We got to mention Black Panther in a minute.
Well, yeah, we will. Yeah. But also, like, his power level was great.
Yeah.
The fight between him and Cap. Yeah. And the Queens Brooklyn thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just so much good stuff. It was, I was honestly not 100% sold on Spider-Man being in this movie because I didn't like him in Civil War the comic.
Yeah.
But this was the best, this was a great way to introduce Spider-Man. And I believe anyone who's listened to this podcast for any length of time knows how skeptical I've been about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Sony's messed it up. Even with Marvel Cinematic Universe being involved, mm-hmm. I wasn't so sure about Spider-Man Homecoming. Now I'm super excited for Spider-Man Homecoming. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, the other breakout, Black Panther.
Yep.
Could they have gotten this any better?
Yeah, man. I believe half the people I know are falling in love with him, and half the people are just like, that dude was badass.
Yeah. He's, they give him his origin. Instead of Claw killing his dad, basically Baron Zemo kills his dad.
Yeah.
They had him be sort of driven by rage and sort of, did you notice there's a little thing when that big chase is going on?
Yep. The tunnel chase.
Did you notice the sound? That when Cap drops, there's a sound. When Winter Soldier drops, there's a sound. When Black Panther hits the ground, there's no sound.
It's like he's stealth.
His vibranium absorbs it.
And
his vibranium suit absorbs bullets. Like, they got so much of Black Panther right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They even had that one scene with the Dora Milaje, which if people don't know, that bald woman who comes out is like the Brides of the Panther. They're his bodyguards.
Yeah,
it's from Priest Run. And her sort of coming out and being, telling the Black Widow, you'll move or you'll be moved.
Yeah.
Just neat little nods. But yeah, they did such a great job with him. He was a badass. He was stealthy. He was smart.
Yep. This is a movie where you were going to have, with so many heroes fighting each other, there was a dangerous possibility of people getting undercut.
Yeah.
And, I feel like a lot of movies do that. When they get too many characters, they lose it completely. But these guys, they kind of proved, who were the directors? The Russo brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they sort of proved that you can do it. And you can have sort of somewhat definitive winners in a fight and stuff at times. And at the same time, everybody got their moment, you know. Nobody, I felt like, got punked out.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch got to be cool.
Oh, Scarlet Witch got to be really cool.
Vision and Scarlet Witch had some really nice scenes together that sort of clearly set up some potential romantic interest.
Vision in the sweater. Vision cooking paprikash.
Yes. Yeah. It was great. And Falcon.
Oh, man. Falcon.
Tore it up.
And he had Red Wing.
Did have Red Wing.
And actually, I loved Falcon and War Machine had sort of a back and forth that was good. And Falcon and Winter Soldier's relationship.
Yeah.
The bit where they get knocked out and he's like, I hate you.
Yeah.
So good.
They had the frenemies thing going.
Yeah, yeah. And the move, can you move your seat? No.
No.
And then, of course, we had Sharon Carter officially introduced.
Yes.
Black Widow sort of, we went through a little more of her backstory a little bit. Yeah. There's
Have to be a double agent.
Everybody gets story stuff in here, which I think is really cool.
They worked in a lot of material. And, of course, there's a very emotional storyline dealing with Tony Stark.
Yeah. The Tony Stark thing I think is interesting is, Dave, you and I both, especially, I think Nick, you too, on Civil War in the comics.
Yeah.
They turned Iron Man basically into a bad guy for 5 years.
Yeah.
Everybody hated him. Everybody looked at what a jerk he was. And they didn't punk him out here. I'm still Team Cap.
Right. But I will say that, I would say 95% of my friends on Facebook who hashtagged it or mentioned said they were Team Cap.
Yep.
So, and I think it's his movie, and B, we know these superheroes, and so, we know that it's, kind of ridiculous to try and cage him.
Yeah.
But within the context of the movies, with its sort of, there is a bit more realism in the Marvel movies, Tony makes a pretty compelling case.
Yeah.
It's like things get out of control.
Yep.
But there is reason for him to kind of want to do what he wants.
And even at the end where he is undeniably the guy trying to kill someone, he's in the right to some extent. You understand why he actually lays it out. He's like, I don't care. He killed my mom.
Right.
I thought that was really good. And they did a nice job of misdirection on that, by the way. That whole crash that it's like, oh, it was to get the super soldier serum.
Yeah.
And they reveal that Zemo's whole agenda was different.
Yep.
I really like that because there was a part of me when I kind of thought it's like, oh, these guys are going to be fighting 5 super soldiers, was kind of, my heart sank a little bit. I kind of thought it was like, oh, it's just going to be a big, very special effects-y boss fight.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really exciting. Making it the more personal fight was more interesting.
Yeah.
And it got pretty emotionally intense.
That fight at the end is brutal because, it's just, in a way, Cap is completely outclassed, so he gets to throw that I can do this all day line back at him. Mm-hmm. But in the same way, Cap could, if Tony didn't have the armor, Cap would beat the crap out of Tony.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous for both of them.
He's pretty strong.
Avengers
in the movies.
One, they said put on the suit. We'll go a few rounds.
Yeah. Well, they did.
Yeah.
There's so many little nods in here. There's so many little things. Crossbones returned.
Yeah. He was ferocious in it.
There's also, I don't know if you noticed, little things like Black Panther's music sting. Whenever he drops in, there's a little bit of that sort of I don't know what to call it, like woodwinds and stuff, but there's a, everybody has little themes that they're playing the music. There's that shot when Tony and Cap are fighting where they do that. They're shooting from sort of outside the room and they get that shot of the shield going up against the repulsors.
I mean, that was directly from the comic.
Yeah. There's so many little perfect moments in this thing. The Russo brothers are doing the most ambitious Marvel movie yet. They're doing Infinity War next.
It was hilarious because I read an article, an interview with them.
Yeah.
They were finished shooting Cap.
Yep.
It released this weekend. Monday they start filming Infinity War.
No, of course they do.
And they're basically like, yeah, no, we're gung ho.
Yeah.
Just keep the momentum going. And I'm like, there are directors that basically would be like, no, I need like 3 months off.
Like Joss Whedon, who quit after two.
And they're just like, no, give us more. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's
how
the thing.
How young are these guys, by the way?
They're younger. They're
like 30 or
30s
something.
Or something. Yeah. But the thing is, Infinity War is one of those things that doing that right and getting that scale is going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. And now I have utter faith in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They understand what it takes to make a comic book movie. And
yeah.
They've been wrong.
The stingers for this movie. We had the Spider-Man one.
Yep.
And was the mid-credits one the Stanley developed? No, that was the end of the movie.
Mr. Stank was Wakanda.
That Wakanda was
it
so
was
great.
Barnes basically freezing himself again because he doesn't can't be trusted.
That's if I have any gripe about this movie, and I have a few minor ones. Like I think Zemo could have been a stronger villain. He's okay,
he's a quiet villain. But I think what they did with him makes him become Zemo.
I just wanted his face stuck in some hot glue. That's all I wanted. But he was a good villain.
And it made sense that he's essentially a catalyst for the heroes to fight, but steps back a bit as a villain.
But
he wanted something more charismatic.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah.
No, I just wanted to be more super villainish.
Actually wanted more of a straight villain.
I love Zemo in the comics, and I wanted a little more of that.
The thing is, like, they wanted a problem that you couldn't punch.
Yeah.
That's why it had to be Black Panther.
Yeah. No, it made sense. It made sense. But my real problem is, we have to wait till 2018 for a Black Panther movie?
Yeah.
Or is it 2017? Maybe it's 2017. It may be next.
Doctor Strange.
Next year is Spider-Man, Guardians 2, and is it Black Panther? Maybe it's Black Panther.
Might be Black Panther.
So maybe only a year. But I don't want to wait a year. Uh-huh. I want my Black Panther movie now. But yeah.
I just saw Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I want that too. Such a fantastic movie. I don't think anything this summer is going to top this for me. I've seen it twice. I will definitely see it again with my kids. I may see it more than that. This is as excited as I've been about a movie since Force Awakens. So,
yeah.
Really, really good stuff.
Good.
Closing thoughts from you guys?
Nick?
No, I mean, I think we've covered most of it.
Other than like it's a long movie.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it that much in this because I felt like every scene had something compelling going on in it or something interesting going on. And indeed, there were times I was like, oh, I want to see more with the Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Go back to them for a while.
Yeah.
I was very happy with it. I'd probably put it in my top five of the Pantheon.
Easily in my top five. All right. Well, that's our thoughts. Let us know what you guys thought, and we'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.